Welcome to Your Career Cure Podcast, where amazing professionals and entrepreneurs share their inspirational stories so you can get a dose of a happy career, happy life. And now, your host, Gail Tolstoy Miller.
Welcome to episode number 2 of Your Career Cure. And today we have an amazing guest, a talented guest. His name is Sam Smith. So welcome, Sam. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Gail. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So Sam Smith is vice president and senior consultant with Priority Project, a boutique consulting firm in Minneapolis, specializing in business and people strategy. Following his experience as a Division I gymnast at Michigan State, Sam returned to Minneapolis, working in an organization ranging from startup to Fortune 20. As a speaker, advisor, and facilitator, organizations engage Sam for strategic planning, leadership, and team development, and executive coaching in their efforts to achieve bigger goals, bolder strategies, and better collaboration. So Sam, why don't you fill in some of the blanks for us?
Thanks, Gail. Well, I'm happy to be with you this morning and appreciate your nice introduction. So I've had a great opportunity to experience a wide range of work, as you mentioned, from startup to Fortune 20, and I've had some great exposure to great leaders and been able to do some interesting stuff. A lot of what I have learned, however, is outside of the business world, goes all the way back to my experience as a gymnast. I started gymnastics at the age of 3 and had the opportunity to compete at a pretty high level all the way through college at Michigan State University. And that has really been a launching point for a lot of the great experiences I've had, really coming down to this idea of curiosity and creativity, which gymnastics is built on those two things. This idea that we are constantly curious about what we can do beyond what we've done before. And that is what drives the creativity that so many people appreciate when they watch the Olympic Games and World Championships. So it's been a great experience that has translated into a professional career as well.
Now, interesting. Were you training for the Olympics?
Well, that is something that I dreamed of as a young child. And then interesting thing about our lives is that we have dreams and we have goals. And then at some point we reassess where we are and we identify what's going to be the right goal for us. And at some point the Olympics were no longer on the table and I started focusing on receiving a scholarship to school. And once I was in school, had achieved that goal, I had a chance to compete at USA Regionals, but that's where my career capped off.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the curiosity and, you know, how it affected your career and, you know, what you did to hone in on that curiosity?
When I was finishing my gymnastics career at Michigan State, I was introduced to the father of one of my teammates who suggested I consider Northwestern Mutual Life as a launching point for my career. And so I did. I looked into it. I had thought I might want to go into sales, and it seemed like a great fit. When I was sitting at the first annual meeting that I had gone to, which, if anyone knows anything about Northwestern Mutual, they know that the annual meeting is a big deal that is highly celebrated, has a lot of great speakers and breakout sessions for professional development. And I was sitting in the audience listening to the speaker thinking, wow, if I could impact people the way that he is impacting me, that's what I would really want to do for the rest of my life. But then I thought, I don't know how I would do that. And so I guess I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. But that little spark was put inside of me that I remained curious about. How might I impact people in a positive way to dream bigger, to plan better, to collaborate more effectively with each other? And so I think it was that little spark, that little introduction to what could be that got me thinking. Then that curiosity really translated into a sales career where I was always looking at what the customer or client that I was working with was trying to achieve. So really getting curious about them and their needs and their desires and their motivations. And then even continuing to be curious about what else I could possibly do with my career. And so that translated into joining a small startup in the mortgage industry and learning all there is to learn about what it takes to start a small business and to sustain a small business. And then seeing how that might translate into more of a business-to-business sales career. And then that's where I really had an opportunity to revisit this idea that I had years before that about getting into speaking and professional development. And it was when I was with a telecommunications firm in their business-to-business sales that I started doing some more speaking and having some success in that area, and then started to explore what a career might look like going down that path. And that's actually when I took an interesting step in my career that might have looked like it was backwards to some. I joined a local person here in Minneapolis who was an international keynote speaker and had a small business that was delivering training around the country, and went to work for him in running his inside sales group. But it was the only way that I could think of to get into the industry. And so again, it came back to curiosity to just say, how am I going to actually tap into this space and try to make a career of it? And that was the avenue that I saw. And so went down that path and then started having some more opportunities to do some speaking myself. And then was able to join an organization where I could take my financial services background, my sales background, my gift for speaking and engaging audiences, and put it all together and join their team in sales training and talent development. And so that constant question of, I wonder what that might look like if I go down that avenue, is something that drove me to expand the context of my experience, to go after things I might not otherwise have gone after, and ultimately was one of the big stepping stones of where I am today.
Has there ever been a downside to your curiosity?
A downside to my curiosity? I don't think there's ever been a downside to it. Maybe sometimes in a little overconfidence in the curiosity, where you start to look at things and go, oh, I wonder what that would look like if I went after that. And when you couple that with great confidence to say, yeah, I could probably do that, then you can get misdirected sometimes. And I've gotten down those paths where I've maybe been a little bit overconfident in my curiosity. But in the end, that experience alone has always been a benefit in the long run. Certainly not in the short run always, but in the long run, it's always been something I could look back on, learn from, and leverage moving forward.
So I think based on your history being a gymnast, that inherently has to give you curiosity. So that probably built that up. What would you say to the audience? Most people, let's face it, have not had your background and trained since the age of 3 to be a gymnast. What would you tell someone out there who maybe is stuck in their career that wants to build their curiosity and maybe they're fearful or they think it's a risk? What advice would you give them to build some of that?
Well, I think one of the first places that we should look with curiosity is in our own historical context. So you're right. Most people haven't trained as a gymnast for 20 years. However, when they look back on the history of what they have done, I don't just mean in their professional career, I mean in their personal lives, going back and looking at all the experiences that they've had and successes and failures and learnings and insights and missteps, when they go back and collect all of that information and they start putting those things next to each other, they're going to start to have some really interesting insights that are going to help them plan a path forward. So we often only look forward, right? We often only look at, well, what's my vision for the future? But if we start first and get really curious about the past and say, how did all these things come together to get me where I am today? And how can I leverage some of those strengths to move forward? It's just like the work that we do in strategic planning with organizations, with an executive team. We ask them to look at the context of their history. How did they get in their business to where they are today? And part of that is to celebrate successes along the way, but part of it is to learn from missteps they've had. And then we take a look at the current reality, and you know, we'll do a traditional SWOT analysis and environmental scan. But those things all give us great inputs to then look forward and say, how are we going to build on some of those things that we've experienced in the past? So I would say you really got to just get curious about your past, because all that stuff has happened for a reason. All of those things can be learning moments and really give you some great ideas for moving forward.
Now, what about curiosity on the job? Like, you're in a job and you're doing your work day in and day out. And I do think it's important to be curious and to question and to really start thinking about how you can be an asset to the organization. What would you give, you know, what advice would you give to someone who wants to be more curious on the job so they can expand their horizons?
Yeah, I always say that my two favorite questions and two favorite statements are, what if, why not, we can, let's go. And so I would start to ask yourself that question, ask your team that question, whether you're leading the team or on the team, is start asking more what if and why not questions. And sometimes you'll have to carve out some specific space to be able to do that, because you got to get your day-to-day work done. But when we can carve out some space to just do some thinking around, what if we started to do things differently, and pick a specific area. So when I've worked with groups on innovation, we try to find, first of all, what do we want to innovate on? And we try to get really close to the customer. And that might be an internal customer or an external customer. And identify where their greatest challenges are, where their greatest needs are, where their greatest desires are, the customer that is. And use that as our starting point and get really curious about what if we did things differently. And there's some great exercises that you can incorporate. I like to have groups go through a process of flipping their assumption. So any decision that we make on a day-to-day basis is based on an assumption we're making. And so if we can flip that assumption on its head and say, okay, we need to assume the opposite, then what would we do differently? The greatest example I can give, maybe not the greatest example, but the simplest example that I can give happened personally. And that was after we moved into our new home about 5 years ago. And you know, when you move into a new home and you get the appliances you get, and then you decide at a later date if we're going to replace them. Well, our dryer broke one Saturday afternoon. And so it was time to replace the washer and dryer, which actually was a bit of a benefit because we didn't really like the washer and dryer. And so it was kind of an excuse to get something nicer. Well, the assumption was that the dryer was broken, which felt like a pretty safe assumption because it wouldn't turn on. And so we went with that assumption, went over to the appliance store and picked out some new appliances and had them delivered, and they took the old ones, and everything was great until we went to turn on the dryer and the dryer didn't work. And now, wow, what a coincidence. Two dryers in a row don't work. I wonder if maybe that wasn't the problem. So turns out it wasn't light. Well, we don't really know because the dryer wasn't in the house any longer, but it very likely was not the dryer, because what we found out, it was not the circuit breaker that was tripped, right? Because I checked that to see if the circuit breaker was tripped. The circuit breaker was bad. So it was nothing that I could see externally, but just think now of the example. If you said, okay, we have to assume the dryer does work. You say, well, that's ridiculous. The dryer doesn't work. I can see right now it doesn't work. Nope. That's not the game we're playing. The game we're playing is that the dryer does work. Now what's the problem? And so then you could go and check the outlet and say, maybe a wire sparked and came undone in the outlet. Nope, that's not the problem. Okay, let's trace that back to the circuit breaker. Well, the circuit isn't tripped. Okay, that's not the problem. I wonder if the circuit is bad. And so now you have what we ended up having is about a $2,000 solution for a $100 problem. Now it all worked out great in the end. We love our washer and dryer, and that's wonderful.
Right.
But how many times in our business are we looking at something and we go, no, I know what the problem is. Sue or Steve is not hitting their sales numbers. And so the problem is that they need more sales training. Well, maybe that's not the problem. Maybe we need to assume that they are a skilled salesperson and they have the skills that they need, but there's something else getting in their way. So when we do that, when we say, okay, we're not assuming that Sue or Steve is the problem, we're assuming they're not the problem. Now, where else would we look? Oh, interesting. We have this customer order system that is really getting in the way. It's really creating problems in orders getting through, or any number of things, or on the fulfillment side. So when we flip our assumption and we get really curious about what else might be, we can come up with some great solutions. Certainty is really the antithesis of curiosity, right? And we so often we're like, no, I know what the problem is. I've seen it 1,000 times. That's when we're usually in trouble.
It's so true. And I always think that making assumptions, we always go to what's easy, right? What we think is the right. So, you know, it's so much easier to do that. And, you know, assumptions can really get you in a lot of trouble in so many different ways.
I always see that when we let our brains go Google, we get in trouble. And what I mean by that is when you start typing in a search for Google, like if you just type in what is the difference, if you just type that in before you type anything else, what does Google do? It completes your sentence for you, right? Mm-hmm. It'll give you 7 different options because Google is saying, I already know what you're looking for. Well, our brain does that same thing. We see the beginning of a problem and our brain wants the shortcut and says, oh, you don't even have to finish telling me what you're looking for. I already know. Now, when you're doing that in a search in Google, Google is usually right. That's why it's so great. But when we're doing that with people, when we're doing that with people and problems, it's not necessarily right. And we don't want to luck into a win. And so we got to hear it all out. And we need to say, all right, am I looking at this through the lens that I've always looked at it through? And therefore, am I in danger of making some false assumptions? Right. So we got to avoid that Googling of our mind.
And it's natural. I mean, it's human nature. And it's also because we're actually bombarded with 10 million pieces of information at any given time. But we could only handle maybe like 10 at any given time. So that's why we always default to what is simple, what is easy. Otherwise, if we deal with all those pieces of information, our minds are going to be in complete overload every second of every day. So it's kind of it's a safety mechanism. But I really, really love what if. I really like that whole concept.
Yeah. Well, and then the next question is why not? Because what you're going to get when you start saying what if is people are going to go, well, I'll tell you what if, because that doesn't work. We've tried that. And that's not going to work. And then that's where I love the second question is why not?
Exactly.
Why can't that work?
And I feel that if people don't do that, it really holds them back to what they really need to be and how they see the world and how they react to things, that their world could be expanded if they start asking what if, why not.
Exactly. We see so many times. So we like to kick off sessions that we do with clients with some activities that we have them do. And so often the point is made that we pass judgment on ourselves so quickly that we shut ourselves down. And as leaders, what I'm constantly asking leaders to do is please stop shutting yourself down. We need you to put your stuff out into the world. We've got to have you do that. And the only way you can do that is by getting curious about what will happen versus being so certain that you know what will happen, which usually results in some fear and uncertainty, ironically. We got to put stuff out into the world. And so when we're not doing that, then we're not seeing people at their best. And then everyone around them loses.
Exactly. You know, I just thought of a quote. Curiosity killed the cat.
I know. So it's so funny. I always say that curiosity killed the cat. However, certainty most undoubtedly kills the greatest ideas. Mm-hmm. Because certainty is kind of an illusion. It's like, well, I already know because I've already tried this. Well, yeah, but maybe you have tried something like this in a situation somewhat similar to this, but you can't argue with the fact that you've never tried what you're thinking about right now in the context that you're in right now with the people that you're around right now. And that doesn't make every idea a good idea. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is be careful what you're certain about, because it can really limit your willingness to go after something. And I love this idea of embracing experimentation. And the Stanford D School, when they talk about human-centered design, they talk about one of the mindsets being embrace experimentation. And I don't think all areas of your business or your career should be experimented with. That can be dangerous. You know, if you go back to the question you asked me about, is there a downside to curiosity? Yeah, I guess that would be it. If you throw everything out and you just experiment with everything, that probably wouldn't be a great idea. But if you can find little areas of your business or little areas of your career in which you can experiment and say, what would happen if I started a departmental newsletter in the company I work with? What would happen if I started an internal podcast interviewing executives in our organization and publishing that on our intranet? I mean, it's just so many what ifs. Can you experiment with a little piece of your career or a little piece of your business and really embrace that mindset?
And also, I think people should ask themselves, like, what's the worst thing could really happen? Like, I think that's what holds people back too, is like, what are the ramifications? And in their mind, they're building it up that, oh my gosh, if I do this, or if I'm curious about that, that something horrible is going to happen. And really, it's really not that bad. Even if it doesn't go the way you want, it's not as bad as you think it is. And sometimes I think not doing and maybe having regret of not doing it is worse. You know, when I think about curiosity and when you were describing it, a person came into my mind who I think it was, let's call him the king of curiosity. And I think it's Steve Jobs, because I think he was such a curious person. And it's interesting because you don't know what you're missing if you've never done it or if you're not thinking it. So if you're not curious, there's a whole world out there that you're missing, but you don't know about it, and you don't know you're missing it because you're not curious about it or you're not doing. So I think Steve Jobs was the master of curiosity, because he would think about things and he was curious, and then he would act upon it, and he gave us things that we never could imagine. I mean, 20 years ago, if you were to tell me that we would have the iPhone, I would be laughing at you. I wouldn't even be able to comprehend that or even understand it.
Right.
It's really amazing how far we can get with curiosity. Okay, great.
I mean, I think the interesting thing about Steve Jobs is I've never met him, but I would guess that he would ask a lot of what if questions. But you know what he was probably really good at is asking the why not question. I mean, I'm sure he was told a million times why things wouldn't work or that they wouldn't work. And my guess is he would just go, why not? Like, why can't we do that? I think he was really good also at gaining insights by observing people and the challenges they were faced with. Because you're never going to go ask a focus group what they want or need, and then they're going to come back with the answer of the iPhone. We didn't know we needed the iPhone.
Right.
That was insight that came from observation. And then I think the other thing that he probably did well is he just took action. He said, we're just going to do this. We're going to see what happens and learn along the way.
Exactly. Okay, so I want to ask you, what was your worst career moment?
My worst career moment was probably when I was, it was kind of the darkest before the dawn. So I was with the telecommunications company that I had mentioned earlier. I was on their sales team. There was a lot of change going on, a lot of challenges facing the organization. I actually moved from an outside sales position to an inside sales position in a different office. The office was dark and dreary, and people were, they were not operating from a place of purpose. There was a lot of integrity lacking in some of the work that was done. And it was just a horrible feeling just even being in that place. It kind of felt like the concept of purgatory. I feel like I was just waiting to do something, to go somewhere. And that's when I found what I was talking to you earlier, what probably would look to most people like a step back, going with this small little organization, working for this individual who was an international keynote speaker and had a training company. And so that's why I say it was like that darkest before the dawn. But that was a challenging time to be in that transition period.
Thank you for sharing that. All right, now we're at the last round, and I call it the career cure round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Imagine this. Imagine you are in a career cure contest to win.
Okay.
You could win $5 million. Imagine $5 million.
All right.
But you need to come up with the best cure to win the $5 million. And I'm going to ask you three questions. So you really, really want to win this $5 million, but you got to have the best answer compared to everyone else. All right. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm feeling the pressure, okay. But I think I'm ready.
This is huge. This is $5 million. Okay. First question. If you could cure everyone's career mistakes on this planet, but could only give one dose of advice or inspiration, what would it be?
Take action on the curiosity that we've talked about. Take action. Don't just be curious, but get curious so that you can take action, make a move, put something into the world and see what happens. I mean, that's ultimately what curiosity is about. See what happens because you don't know. So take action on that curiosity.
Okay, great. Second question. In order to improve corporate America, what would be the one cure that you would provide to improve it?
I would say stop positioning and get something done. Don't buy into the politics. Don't buy into propping yourself up and positioning yourself. Just go and get something done. I guess it goes back to the take action. Get something done based on the curiosity that you've been cultivating.
Okay, great. Third and last question. In order to cure people from feeling stuck in their career, What would be the one cure for them to get unstuck today?
I would say start small. So you don't have to, you don't have to get completely unstuck today. You don't have to land in your dream job tomorrow, but you can start small. We talked about embracing experimentation. Find a little area that you can carve out and call it a pilot. That's what I always say. Call it a pilot and move on. Anything you break can probably be fixed. So to get unstuck, just find something small, something little you can do. Get curious about it, gain some insights on it, and take some action.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sam Smith, not the singer.
That's right.
I was wondering, like, when I introduce you, are people thinking, oh my gosh, Gail has Sam Smith, the singer. But you're just as talented and wonderful. And thank you so much for the information that you provided. How can the audience reach out to you? How can they contact you?
Well, they can reach out to me by email, sam.smith@proudyproject.com, P-R-O-U-T-Y, project.com. They can also call 612-309-4295. Would love to visit with anyone that has more questions or even more stories. I love hearing success stories on people that hear this information and go, oh, I totally do that. I would love to hear from them. So thanks for having me on, Gail. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you. And all your information will be on the website. If anyone missed it, they can definitely get it with the notes. So thank you for being a wonderful guest. And I can't wait for the next Your Career Cure episode. Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
Thanks for listening. You can get more incredible career information when you visit yourcareercure.com. And don't forget, happy career, happy life.